I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 19th of November, the 150th anniversary of the Gettysburg Address, which is what we'll talk about hour two of our program today. This hour, Obamacare, so what could go wrong next? One of our guests this hour says busted website, canceled policies, lousy early enrollment numbers, and that could be just the warm-up. We'll have two guests this hour, David Nather, who is senior policy reporter at Politico Pro. He was previously the healthcare editor and has worked at Politico for a couple of years. He spent nearly a decade at Congressional Quarterly, where he wrote about the politics of Congress and the White House. He's the author of The New Healthcare System, Everything You Need to Know, A Consumer's Guide to the Affordable Care Act, and co-author of Getting It Done, How Obama and Congress Finally Broke the Stalemate to Make Way for Healthcare Reform. So as he says, yes, he has read the law many, many times. Later in the hour, Sarah Luke will join us, a senior policy expert at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. And she's written about the rollout of the CHIP program and how it experienced some difficulties at the beginning and grew as the years went on. Is this a good comparison? We'll talk to Sarah about this. All hour, we welcome your phone calls, as we always do. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page, if you would like to leave messages there, we're happy to read them, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. David, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
I ask this every single time we talk about this, but I still don't understand why this website isn't up and running. What is the problem? We have all these technologically minded people. We've sent people to the moon, for heaven's sake. We can't get a website together?
Yeah, I mean, it has been kind of amazing, isn't it? Especially, you know, since you know, President Obama and his whole campaign crew were so tech savvy with the campaign. But it's not the same thing when you're building a website for the government. There are all these IT purchasing rules, and you know, they're so onerous that you don't necessarily get the best people bidding on them. You know, there are issues like that, but there's also issues of whether this is managed properly to begin with. You know, people have asked, well, why was the Medicare agency trying to pull together all the different parts of this website, pulling, you know, coordinating all the work of the contractors? They don't have the IT experience to do that. You know, somebody else should have been put in charge of that. So it just sounds like there were a series of mistakes all the way down the line that have kind of led to this this mess that you see today.
It's hard to understand because obviously the president cares about this deeply. It was a huge public policy fight for him. It went on and on and on. It is said to be his main legacy. You would have thought that things would have gone according to plan, that there wouldn't be these kinds of problems, and these problems are creating subsequent problems.
It really is amazing, isn't it? I mean, that's another big question about it is, you know, was the president paying enough attention to every detail of the rollout? Was he asking the right question, because this is so important to his legacy? But you also have to remember that this federal enrollment website was bigger than they ever thought it was going to have to be, because, you know, they expected the way the law is written, the states were supposed to build these websites. Mm-hmm. They were supposed to do all this themselves. There's just supposed to be like a little kind of a federal fallback for maybe a few states wouldn't build them. Instead, 36 states are under this federal website now. It's just a much bigger project than anybody thought. You know, Republicans in Congress have not been giving them a lot of the funding they've been asked for. So, you know, there are a lot of headwinds, but on top of the headwinds, it's increasingly looking like the management was lacking at many levels.
And those states that are doing this themselves, David, are we noticing a difference? Are those plans up and running, or do they have technical difficulties as well?
You know, it's a mixed bag, but yeah, there are states that are doing their own websites and are doing a lot better at this. California is, Connecticut is, Kentucky, which is a really interesting state because it's Mitch McConnell's state. They have a Democratic governor, and they have built their own website, and it's working great. Not every state is doing that well, or you know, Oregon is not. I think Maryland has had some problems that they still haven't totally straightened out. But there's a very interesting lesson in here, which is, you know, if more states had done their own enrollment websites, you know, it could have been a very different story than we're seeing today.
And do you think that by November 30th, 30 days, has September, April, June, and 31st of November, there will be, this will be up and running as the president has said he thinks it will be?
It's looking less and less likely every day that it's going to be a glitch-free experience by November 30th. You know, will it be better than it was when it launched? Sure, but it's not going to be super smooth. There's just too much to do. One of the head officials testified today that about 30% of the IT for the website hasn't even been built yet.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, this is back-end stuff like sending payments to the insurers and things like that. They're not necessarily the front-end things that you or I would see if we're just going to the website trying to sign up for health insurance. But the point is, you know, that was really all supposed to be ready on October 1st when they launched.
Right. And I'm sorry, I misspoke. It's 30 days half November, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're okay. Trying. Yeah, in other words, they're
November
trying to.
30th.
Yeah, I mean, what they've been saying is they're trying to get this to work well for the vast majority of users by the end of November, and you know, it'll certainly be better, but you know, the track record so far suggests that it's not going to be, you know, it's still not going to be smooth.
You write about some worst case scenarios in a recent piece, and you say only sick people, this is a worst case scenario, only sick people enroll in the Obamacare health insurance plans, healthy people stay away, and everyone's premiums rise out of control because there are no healthy people to cover the sick people's costs. Is that a deep concern?
Well, it's a deeper concern than it was before. You know, it's that had always been on people's radar screens as a worst case scenario. That if all you get are the sick people signing up for these Obamacare exchanges, that's not what you want because you don't have healthy people to help pay for their costs. So if you have that, then it just becomes super expensive, and then it drives away more and more people, and so forth. We don't know yet that's absolutely going to happen, and you know, certainly if they get the website working well enough that they can get a lot more people enrolled, that becomes less of a risk. But the problem right now is that the start has been so slow and the publicity has been so bad that, you know, what if the young and healthy people just never come back? You know, the administration is trying to make overtures to them saying, you know, if you tried before and you got stuck, come back, please. You know, it's going to be a better website now and so forth. But they're really going to have to keep their fingers crossed that the healthy people will come back, because otherwise you do have just the sick people and you have a big problem.
Mm-hmm. When we heard about those people who were waiting to sign up, I've heard a million, million point one, various estimates, but over a million people. Do we have any idea who those people were? Has anybody surveyed to see if indeed they were young and healthy people needed for this to work?
No, we don't really. Those were not part of the figures that the administration released. We don't have a good sense of, you know, what's the age range, and we wouldn't know the health anyway because you're not supposed to ask that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we'll probably know more as time goes along. You know, there's a lot of speculation about it. Of course, that the most motivated people who've stuck all the way through this glitchy website would be, you know, the sick people who really need the coverage. There have also been people who have suggested that, you know, the young and healthy people for whom this is not a high priority, they may just wait until the end. The enrollment period lasts through March, so you can't necessarily, you know, panic right now just because they haven't signed up yet. They might do it at the last minute, but the question is, what if they don't?
David, what happened at that meeting, I think it was on Friday, with the president and health insurance people in this country? What was discussed?
Well, they talked about this new plan that the administration has come up with to try to help people who are getting canceled policies keep their old plans. But the catch to that is, you know, all the White House said was that, you know, health insurers who are canceling people's policies can extend them for another year. It doesn't mean they have to. It just means they can, and it's pretty late in the game And the health insurance people have kind of warned the president what they've been saying publicly, which is it's kind of too late to uncancel a lot of policies. And even if you did, the risk is that all the people who would stay with their old plans would be the healthy people. So, again, you know, it could mean that the only people who decide to switch plans and go for the Obamacare policies are the sick people because they have to be accepted. So there was a lot of talk about that. Apparently the president did also warn the health insurers that, you know, even though there would be help for health insurers who took these new customers, it wouldn't be a blank check. You know, they can't expect a bailout of all the costs that they might receive.
And are we talking about such a significant number of people that it could upset the whole apple cart?
Well, there's a lot. I mean, there's no universally accepted estimate of how many people are having canceled policies. But the best estimates that that our healthcare team has heard are anywhere from 3 to 4 million people. So, you know, that's a lot considering that the Obamacare healthcare exchanges were only supposed to get about 7 million people total in the first year. So, you know, and it's unclear whether that counts the people who are having their policies canceled. So, you know, if there are a lot of people that the health insurers were counting on to have a good and healthy mix of people, and suddenly they don't show up, yeah, there's real potential for all the costs to go out of whack.
Mm-hmm. And what happens to those people who have their policies canceled and insurance commissioners in certain states don't really want to deal with this whole idea? So they may not do it. The insurance companies may not extend their policy.
Right.
This website isn't up and running. So people, what will happen to them if the website isn't up and running by, say, January?
Well, that's going to be a real problem and a real hassle for those people. Now, there are other ways to sign up, by the call centers, even paper applications. But there doesn't seem to be any foolproof way of getting around the website, because at some point, you know, the phone operators have to use it too. Same deal. You know, if you could. There is the option of applying directly to the insurers, and most of them are advertising their Obamacare plans. But that really only makes sense if your income's pretty high and you wouldn't be getting a subsidy, because at this point there doesn't seem to be a mechanism for insurers to just give those subsidies to low-income people the way the Obamacare exchanges are supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. What is at the heart, before we go to phone calls here, David? Obviously, this is a mess trying to sign up for this, and it should have been up and rolling. Is there something else that's fueling this intense opposition to the Affordable Care Act? If this thing is up and running, will we still see the kind of intense opposition that we've been seeing for years now?
Yeah, well, of course you will, because it was controversial all along. You know, the Republicans have lined up unanimously against it, and you know, most of the polls, even independents, aren't really sure about it. They're worried about the impact on their own health care and, you know, the cost to the government. I mean, it's just how it is. Health care is so personal to so many people that it's always going to be an emotional issue. So even with a perfect rollout, you would still hear a lot of yelling about it. And, of course, we don't have a perfect rollout, so all of this has been intensified.
Let's go to phone calls. David has time for a few. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. David Nather is senior policy reporter at Politico Pro, previously the healthcare editor, and has worked at Politico for a couple of years, also covered Congress for 15 years, and he has read more than once the Affordable Care Act. 800-486-8655 is our number. The email is talk@WPR.org. And you can always leave messages for us on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. I tend to forget about Twitter, but we're there too, @KDunnShow. Charlie in Milwaukee, our first caller for you, David. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, thank you, Kathleen. My comment is, as a strict, I'm a conservative person, and there are so many things about the Affordable Care Act that I just think are phenomenal. Things like the exchanges. I think decreasing the dropping of patients because of you know, limits and stuff like that. There are so many things that speak to a business doing the right thing and promoting things. But don't you think that because it's so large, that the government really shouldn't be the actor in doing all this, and that that's where the problem is, and that it's just too large for the government to do, and that the efficiency that would be required can only be done by the private sector? Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Charlie.
Yeah, so, you know, that goes to the heart of the debate, too, and has all along. This is just too big a plan to solve the problems that you're trying to solve. And, you know, one of the best examples is pre-existing conditions. And, you know, a lot of Republicans would argue, well, if that's what you're trying to solve, there are ways to do it without changing the whole insurance market for everyone. You're trying to remake the whole individual health insurance market. But the problem is, there was never one plan that Republicans could agree on as an alternative or that could get enough support to pass at the time. So this is what we have. It is an attempt to make the whole individual health insurance market work more like what the rest of us get through the workplace, you know, where you're not locked out because of pre-existing conditions, you don't have all these kind of holes in your coverage and so forth. But it's hard to translate that to the individual market because you're not getting the contribution from your employer. That masks a lot of the cost for the rest of us. We just don't see it. So now they're trying to do it in the individual market, and probably all the costs are not going to be masked for everyone, and you are going to have these kinds of snags and problems all, you know, along the way. I mean, there are a lot of what-ifs in this whole debate, but, you know, one of them would have been, you know, what if there was one stronger, more limited alternative to all of this? Could that ever have passed? But the fact is there just wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Charlie. Steve in Waukesha. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having me on the air.
Sure.
I wonder if your guest can speak to a particular issue that I have, and that is whether the actual health insurance companies that are in the marketplace, whether they have the capability legally to offer the subsidies to individuals outside of the marketplace. I've heard some kind of rumblings from the companies saying that they're going to have the capability to do that starting January 1. And I just wonder if your guest can speak to any legal issues he's looked up with that.
I can't say I've looked into the legalities of it. I can't answer that question definitively. I know that there has been talk between insurers and the administration to figure out whether there is a way to do this, but at this moment, no. It has to be done through the health exchanges, and that's another urgent reason that, you know, they've got to get the federal website working, because otherwise, at this moment, there isn't another mechanism for people who need the subsidies.
Diane in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I had heard a rumor that I'd like somebody to investigate. It's that there's an app that you can put on your computer that will access the Affordable Care Act website over and over again every 2 minutes, keeping it busy. Is that possible? And is it real?
Have not heard that one, so can't comment on the plausibility.
There have been reports that the system has been hacked. You've heard those, I'm sure. Do you put any faith in those?
Not a lot. I believe that the Medicare agency official who was testifying this morning suggested that there was one incident that they had looked into, or you know, an attempt that they were looking into. Didn't give a lot of details. But other than that, you know, well, yeah, I mean, we've heard all the same rumors that everybody else, that, mm-hmm. you know, there has been hacking, that there have been, you know, cyber attacks to try to slow, you know, the website down, things like that. None of that ever panned out.
Juliana in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hello. Thank you. I have two comments I would like your guest to comment on, please. First of all, I blame the media to a large extent for highlighting all the problems with Obamacare. I would like to see more coverage of what's going on in states like Kentucky or California, where signing up seems to be going well. My second comment is helping people who do not want to pay for someone else's health problems. First of all, how many of these so-called healthy people engage in risky behaviors, like exposing themselves to AIDS, or how many of them smoke or do drugs? And my other concern is, when did we get to be such a selfish nation that we're not willing to go out and help others through something like, you know, these health insurance exchanges? And thank you so much, Kathleen, for having this guest.
Thank you.
And I'm going to listen now.
All right, Juliana. Thank you. David?
Yeah, so it is true. Some of the states that that have run their own websites, like California and Kentucky, are doing a lot better. And I think you're going to start to see some more of the coverage shift to that, just because, you know, we've done so much about the breakdowns of the federal website. But as you know, as far as selfishness of the country, you know, it's a reality that people want to protect the health care that they have, and you know, a lot of people, unless they have been through an experience like having a pre-existing condition and trying to get health insurance on your own and not being able to, it doesn't mean much to most people. You know, it's an abstraction. So what the administration has been trying to sell to everybody is, you know, a safety net that everybody can count on, that you'll be able to use if you get sick one day. Some people can relate to that. Some people just can't. It's sad, but it's a political reality.
It is amazing because it could happen, and it has happened to so many people. How many reports have we seen? People who were doing just fine, thank you, and then had a catastrophic illness or an accident, and they lost everything for their lifetimes. They lost everything. It can happen to people, and yet we don't seem to believe that we should be walking a mile in somebody else's shoes. It could happen. That's something that could happen in life to anybody, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what, you know, that's what so much of the original health reform debate was about. But now, as it starts to affect other people who had coverage and were say they were happy with it, you know, it's the side effects that get the attention, not the original goals of the law.
Mm-hmm. Now, you can be perfectly honest with me. Can you take one more phone call? I know you're on a time bind, but we have...
In perfect honesty, I really can't.
David. All right, fine. We'll talk to you again. Thank you again so much for being with us.
All right, thank you.
David Nather with us the first half hour here. Well, if you're on hold, don't worry. We'll get to you. You're just going to have to wait a little bit longer. We're just switching guests, but not necessarily the topic. David is senior policy reporter at Politico Pro. He was previously the healthcare editor, and he's worked at Politico since 2011, covered Congress for 15 years and knows the Affordable Care Act inside out. He has read the whole thing, how many people have, and more than once. So we'll continue the possible further problems that could go wrong with Obamacare. And we're going to pay attention to, I haven't heard anybody report on this, the rollout of the CHIP program, which experienced some difficulties. Susan Luke wrote about those. She's a senior policy expert at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, and she joins us next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining us now is Susan Luke, senior policy expert at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. She works on health reform implementation, health insurance exchanges, private market reforms included in the Affordable Care Act. She's also a consumer representative to the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. Our phone lines are jammed. Please, I ask you to just be patient. Let's speak with Susan for a little while, and then we'll get to your many phone calls. Hi, Susan. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
There is phenomenal interest in this topic. All we have to do is say we're talking about this, and whoa, the phone lines are just going crazy. So we'll take a few in a moment. You wrote something. I hadn't heard this examined before. You looked at the problems that the CHIP program experienced when it was rolled out. And you wrote an article, CHIP Experience Shows That Health Reform Enrollment Will Take Time to Ramp Up. What are the similarities?
Well, I actually didn't write that article about that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. But I can just say that in general, a colleague of mine did write that piece. And definitely what we know from the CHIP experience is that it does take time when there's a new program. You know, you should expect a number of years for it to really get up to what you'd consider kind of maximum enrollment. Mm-hmm. So it just takes time for people to learn about what's available to them and for the process to move along enough that people can get enrolled.
How much time does the Affordable Care Act have to get people enrolled? How many have to be enrolled in order for it to function, to get healthy people and sick people enrolled?
So, you know, I think everybody is watching, obviously, at this initial year as kind of a marker of how successful it is. But I think the point with the CHIP experience is that it isn't all going to – not everybody that's eligible, not everybody that's uninsured is going to be getting into the program in that first year. So I think that's one thing to kind of keep in mind. The Congressional Budget Office, when it was sort of predicting how many people were going to enroll, you know, it also estimated, you know, somewhere around 7 million people on the exchanges in the first year. Which is far, far fewer people than actually could potentially get coverage in the exchanges or subsidies in the exchanges. You know, and over the next couple of years, you get into the 20, 25 million person range. So that does just take time, and that's kind of always been expected. I think there's no real winning number. I think people ask that, you know, kind of wanting to know, like, what is a success? I think we want to obviously get as many people access to coverage that we can. So that would be successful. But in terms of the success of the exchanges, it's obviously very important to make sure that there's a balanced pool of people that enroll in the new marketplaces. You want to make sure that it's not just sick people, but that there's also people of average health and people that are healthy, because you don't want to just have everybody buying insurance who's definitely going to be using a bunch of health care.
Right.
You want a well-balanced risk pool to kind of spread the costs among an average group of people.
And Sarah, have you looked at what happened in Massachusetts? Some comparisons have been made to Massachusetts in terms of the organization of this plan. Did Massachusetts have similar concerns when it was rolled out, their program?
I'm not sure that it was exactly the same situation in Massachusetts. I mean, certainly there's an element in Massachusetts of it taking some time for enrollment to ramp up. I think in this case, there's more changes going on in terms of making a market accessible that hasn't been accessible in the past, because right now the individual health insurance market in most states, you know, if you're sick, you might not be able to get a plan, or you might be quoted very, very high premium rates. So it's a very inaccessible market for significant piece of the population. And by changing that, that's really a very big change happening at the same time that the marketplaces are getting set up and the new subsidies are becoming available to help people for their coverage.
Mm-hmm. We, of course, have heard day after day about all that's wrong with the Affordable Care Act and the problems with the website, et cetera. Do you share concerns about the rollout of this program, and does a rather unsuccessful rollout indicate or have a ripple effect creating other problems for the Affordable Care Act, Sarah?
I think that there, you know, any of us who really wanted to see lots of enrollment by lots of people, very smooth process right away, I think we all knew that it wasn't going to happen perfectly right away. I think it's frustrating to see the problems that have happened. And for sure, it's a concern that, you know, we want to make sure that it gets much smoother very quickly for many more people so that, you know, they can get in and can avail themselves of all the benefits that are there under the law. So that is the unfortunate part about, you know, some of the technical glitches and the problems with the website that have happened, is that it isn't really the law that's the problem, and it's really important to make sure that people understand the benefits that are available to them. And pretty quickly here, very important to make sure that people do get access to those benefits.
Right. I've heard from some people that it's a lickety-split. They've gotten through and signed up. I've heard from others that it's really a fairly complicated procedure. Does that just depend on where you live in the country?
It depends on a lot of things. I mean, I think, you know, if you're a person using the website, there's, you know, sometimes when the website has worked perfectly fine and you're able to, like you say, get in lickety-split and set up your account and do your application, and that's not a problem. And other people are having more challenges in terms of not being able to get through that process online. One important thing to know is that you don't have to use the website. People have had success also calling on the phone to the call center and letting the people on the other line know that they want to do their application, you know, verbally. And that can be a very swift way to do it, and it might be a really good way for people to do it if they're not that excited about using the computer or the website, or they've been frustrated by what they've heard in the news. But I think, you know, I think that there's a lot of options for people. I think that the experiences are really varied. And to some extent, it does depend on where you live. I mean, we've seen some reports that states that are operating their own exchanges have had quite good success in terms of enrollment and in terms of fixing some of the initial problems that they had on their websites. So, you know, some of the people in those states perhaps have had an easier time than the folks in states that have been kind of have had these challenges because of the federal website.
Let's go to phone calls. We have many of them this hour. 800-486-8655. Your calls for Sarah Luke, senior policy expert at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, who works on issues related to health reform implementation. She was a reporter for a number of years in the Washington Bureau of the Wall Street Journal, writing about health policy, including Medicare prescription drug legislation and state and federal proposals to modify Medicaid and the efforts of healthcare companies to influence policy changes. So she has been looking extensively on private market reforms included in the Affordable Care Act and health insurance exchanges. Let's go back to phone calls to Mary in West Bend. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for having me on the program. I wanted to say that I know Wisconsin and our Governor Walker has, you know, been fighting this for all the time, and when he could have gone in and helped with the exchanges for our state, would have made it a lot easier instead of just bashing the plan. I think that probably put a lot of problems with the plan, too.
How have politics played into the difficulties with the rollout, if at all? Would Sarah?
Well, politics isn't really my area, but I will say that I think that the way the law was written, it really did envision states primarily being the ones in the driver's seat in terms of the insurance marketplaces. They already have that role in terms of regulating those markets today for their residents. So the idea behind the Affordable Care Act was that states would set up the marketplaces, make some important decisions policy-wise about how they would run, and get a lot of federal support to kind of get them off the ground. But it wasn't necessarily anticipated by the people who wrote the legislation that most states, I think it's 36 states now, have an exchange that's operated by the federal government instead. I don't think that was expected because it was, you know, something that was viewed at that time as that something the states would want to do. But as it turned out, that wasn't something a number of states were interested in doing for whatever reason. And here we are.
Thank you, Mary. Dave in Appleton. Hi.
Hi. Well, my personal health policy is 220 pages, and the federal is 2,000, so I think that that's pretty efficient since little old me is 200 pages. Anyway, I finally feel like a first-class health citizen, having paid for health insurance all these years and never having protection against pre-existing conditions, which has come up to bite me every now and then, never having protection against all the other things I now have protection for, and I still spend $940 a month. But I have these protections. I just think the whole problems with the website is symptomatic of the rot in our whole system. I mean, for people, if you really want to change the system, get rid of all employer-paid health care. Why should employers socialize their health care for their employees? And everybody will see what I see, which is the rot in the system. And then we'll have fundamental reform. This whole website and everything is just a peephole into the complexities and ridiculous waste in our system. And unfortunately, people won't see it that way, but that's what it is. there's more of it out there, but most people don't see it when they have the benefit of employer-paid health care.
And when you talk about the rot, Dave, what rot are you talking about?
Oh, my God, the waste, the fraud, the lack of consumer care about getting overtreated, doctors overtreating people who don't reject it. There's so many things, the 25% or 20% overhead we have in managing our system. If we simply paid what other countries pay us percentage of our GDP, we'd have no federal budget deficit.
Sarah.
Well, I think the caller made a really, really good point about the experience that he's had so far in the individual health insurance market. I think what he was saying is really representative of what a lot of people have experienced in terms of complexity and also difficulty because they've had health problems in the past. And the good news here is that once the website is fixed and once more people are able, whether they're using the website or the other methods, to get enrolled in the new coverage under the new rules in 2014, a lot of those problems are going to be alleviated because they can't be denied coverage for their health status. They can't be charged more because they have health problems. And a whole array of benefits and financial protections that wasn't guaranteed before in the individual market is going to be guaranteed because of the Affordable Care Act. So it's a huge improvement, and hopefully once everybody sees that, they'll feel like they're much better off.
Thanks, Dave, for the call. Dave talked about paying $940 a month for health insurance, which seems pretty steep to me. Do you have any knowledge of what the numbers are here, what people can expect to pay? I know there are different levels of care, the programs that are available. Does that strike you as a really high number if you signed up for the Affordable Care Act, which maybe he will do, or is that reasonable?
I think in the market today, it's really in the individual market today, there's not a lot of good data about what people pay. The numbers you see posted on websites are usually kind of the best rate that you can get if you're kind of in the healthiest, best situation. But once you go through the process and apply for insurance and the insurance company looks at you and your situation and how much you're going to cost them, they're probably going to tack on some other charges if they see something that they think is going to be expensive. So it may be that he, is in that sort of a situation where he's gotten a policy that that costs more because he has pre-existing health conditions. He may be in the state high-risk pool where the premiums are going to be higher because it's a place for people to go when they have health problems. But I don't really know about his specific situation.
Right.
To me, it sounds high for the new world. I don't know how old he is either, but it sounds high for me in the new world to have a premium of that amount. And I think that people will be pleasantly surprised if they're in a situation like the caller described with the kind of rate that they're going to be able to get, not to mention the fact that with a subsidy, which many, many people are going to be able to get, that can bring down the premium even more.
We go next to Sue in Madison. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling because I'm offended that it's called the Affordable Care Act, and I'll tell you my situation. I'm married, and I have an 18-year-old daughter who's a full-time college student. She works part-time, so her income is included in our household income for the Affordable Care Act. My husband is offered health insurance at work. $43.98 is what he'd have to pay per paycheck twice a month to cover just himself. If my daughter and I go on it with him, it'll be $404 a month. He brings home $435 a paycheck. I'm sorry, $404 per paycheck. So out of the $870 he brings home a month, $808 of it will be towards health insurance. That's not enough money for three people to live on. The other part of that is because he's offered it at work, then even if we go to the exchange and buy it, we don't get the subsidy. That's ridiculous to me. Comments?
There is certainly an issue for people who have where one member of the family has a offer of coverage from their employer. The weather that offer prevents the rest of the family members from getting subsidies in the exchanges. You know, it's all based on what the employer what the employees' share of the premium is just for their individual coverage. So they're not really taking into account the whole family's cost for getting the coverage to the employer. So it's a very unfortunate situation. It's something that a lot of people would like to fix because it's going to make coverage difficult for some families to afford when one member has that offer of coverage, but it's quite expensive for them to get coverage for the rest of the family members. That said, I wouldn't close down the idea that there are going to be potentially some options. So I think it's still worth looking into whether there might be, whether for your daughter or other folks in the family, some options that would be better. But yeah, it's not a law that's going to solve everybody's problem.
How so?
Well, I mean, I think that it would be worth looking into what might be available to your daughter, at least. And then also there are special provisions if the insurance in the exchange is unaffordable or the insurance that's unavailable to you is unaffordable. There may be opportunities to get exemptions.
Okay, I went to the place in Madison where you do the Affordable Care Act, and I sat there. I was there for 2 hours going over all the scenarios because they told me I was okay to go on the exchange because the insurance cost too much. And a guy sat there for quite a while and read through it, and he said, no, you're right. You don't get that. But the other part was I want to claim my daughter as a dependent because she's a full-time student, and we need those tax write-offs for her tuition or the credits for that. And if she goes on there as a dependent, she can't get the insurance as a dependent, was my understanding.
Yeah, I'm sorry I can't really go fully into detail about all of your situation. That's not really my area, but I think what I would recommend is either getting in touch with, it sounds like you've been in touch with local people that are doing assistance, and that would probably be what I would want to do or want to recommend that you do to just see if it's better, what sort of your options might be going forward.
Yeah, I wouldn't stop, Sue, with the answers you've been given. Sometimes you need to go somewhere else to get another kind of answer, because it sounds like he's not bringing home all that much money, and that there ought to be, if you go on the exchange, some subsidy available, and there ought to be a way for her daughter to be included. It's, until 26 on the Affordable Care. So something doesn't seem right here, but we urge you to go somewhere else. And do you know, can you give people, where is the best place to go to get information about all of this?
There is a local help option on healthcare.gov. I can't tell you exactly what it looks like at the moment. I don't know off the top of my head because I haven't tried to see it myself. But if you go to the healthcare.gov website, you should be able to find local help, and it should list who is doing the assistance in your area and where you could go or where you could call. I've also heard that people have had some success calling healthcare.gov and using the operators there to help answer any of the questions that people might have. But the caller certainly has a real issue in terms of the affordability of her coverage.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Healthcare.gov, place to go. All right. Sarah Luke is our guest. We're talking about what more might go wrong with healthcare reform and what might work and answering your questions. And it's obvious that people still have many of them. Sarah is a senior policy expert at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, back to phone calls. Let's go to Jennifer in Cassville. Hi, Jennifer.
Oh, thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
The reason I'm calling is because your first guest alluded to the cost of this program and its implementation. But I'd like to go back to 2004 when the medical bankruptcies in the state of Wisconsin were as much as $2 billion. Meanwhile, the CEOs of these health insurance companies were bringing in salaries and bonuses upwards of $10 million. It's refreshing to know that this imbalance of care versus pay is going to be more equitable, and that the money that has been spent on the amazing bonuses to these CEOs is going to go back into the system and go to the health care of regular folks and people. And I have to wonder if something that is this big and has been going on for so long and that is now going to be drastically changed isn't going to have some quirks and some, you know, belly aches and burping that has to be done to get everything to run correctly. But I do think we're headed in the right direction, and I wish the media would take a much more positive stance towards this. And my question for your budget analyst is this. Does she see that the spreading out of all of this money that used to go to the private sector that will now go back into the system to actually help people in healthcare, does she see the smoothing effect going to help with the implementation of this program as time goes on?
Sarah. Hello, Sarah, are you there? Hello. Our phone dropped. We're having problems with that. We'll get her right back on the line and have time to take a few more phone calls. We're looking again at healthcare this hour of the program, which is something I'm convinced we could spend 2 hours every day talking about and not get all the phone calls that are in line right now. Sarah is with the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, and we're looking at the ins and outs of the Affordable Care Act with her, this part of the program. And we may thank you, Jennifer, very much for your call. I'm not sure we're going to have time to get a full response because I'm not sure she heard all that you said, but your points are very well taken. I don't know if you heard that. Our phone just kind of dropped here. Sarah, are you there?
I am here.
Okay. Did you hear Jennifer?
I did not.
All right. I'm sorry. She was quite elegant and eloquent, and it was a long statement. But she was wondering about who's benefited from the system that we have had in place, saying that insurance executives are taking home a lot of bonuses and contrasting that with the number of people who have experienced medical bankruptcies in the country. Does the Affordable Care Act address those kinds of issues?
The Affordable Care Act definitely has provisions that help to give, you know, individuals and families more power in the market, more ability to look around for plans, and a guarantee that they can get coverage in the individual market that the insurance company can't deny them. So the system that we've had in the past in most states is one where the insurers have had a lot of the power to sort of say who they'll take and who they won't, how much they'll charge people based on, you know, different characteristics that they have. So people had a lot less room to maneuver, a lot less power to kind of shop around, change from one carrier to another, because once they got a policy, they were kind of, you know, locked into it for as long as they needed to have that policy in the individual market. So I think that's a huge improvement.
Uh-huh.
There are also a lot of provisions dealing with, you know, there's a medical loss ratio provision, so a requirement that insurers spend a certain percentage of what they're collecting in premiums on actual healthcare services rather than on non-healthcare costs like administrative costs. So that's definitely a way to try to make sure that the premiums that people are paying for coverage, that they're actually getting something for their money, and that it's not just kind of going into overhead mm-hmm. or other things.
All right. Sarah, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Sarah Luke, our guest from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the show. Thanks to Robin Cherry for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Rest assured, we will be doing many more programs on healthcare reform in this country in the days ahead. Celebrate Abraham Lincoln with us, hour two.